Yes, yes, there we go. Welcome to Journeys with JP on Wolf Spirit Radio, Revolution Radio, at freedomslips.com, revolution-radio.com, lots of other permutations. On Scottish Sovereigns on the Land, .ning.com, and also on Tiernasauer from Ireland. So we're broadcasting from Scotland, Ireland, Kentucky, and Nevada. So welcome everybody to Journeys with JP. It's just past 5 PST on the 23rd of February. So the 23rd, good old 23. If anybody's anyway, 23. There's always a 23 in every news program and every science fiction program. Watch out for it. There'll be a journalist and they'll be standing in front of like building 23 or that. You'll see it. Every news show. It shows that it's fiction. Anyway, meanwhile, we are joined tonight, first of all, with my erstwhile right. Anyway, my dear friend Nancy Hopkins, and co-producer and sidekick and Shungite co-creator, will be holding the space here for our and her friend. I met my guest tonight through Nancy, and she's a communicator of animals, and one of the particular animals that she communicates with has started talking to her and describes himself as a watcher, as a fully conscious being that is expressing in through this, you know, in the skin suit of a horse. So we'll be introduced to Jack, and we'll also be introduced to various other animals who have greater spirits within them. And Jean has the ability to speak to these beings and to also bring through messages from them. They have a mission, they have a message. And so tonight, without any further ado, I would like to introduce Jean Rockefeller. Good afternoon, Jean. How are you?
Hello, Jay. Thanks for having me on.
It's lovely to have you, Jean. And so, first of all, you know, I just threw the name out, and we need to dispel all the distress that everybody's feeling about right now, in that although you are married to a man called John D. Rockefeller, you are not... he is not the famous Illuminati John D. Rockefeller. It's like... like distant cousins, is like you know, got the same name, but not the same. Certainly not billionaires. Certainly not controlling the world with your financial empires or anything like that. Have I got that about down?
Yes, you do. Cool. That was very eloquent. Thank you, Jack.
So, you yourself, your day job, as it were, is in dentistry. And I can see how you are. You've been a lover and a lover of animals all your life, that really, you know, it shows that you know you love them. It's a real, you know, there's a connection there that is not just like you keep them or you show them. Or you ride them or anything like that, but you love them. I can really see that. The show is called Journeys. Jean, would you like to just, you know, lay out your journey? How did you get here? that's the question. How did you get here? What are you doing?
Well, Jay, it's a long story, but we have 2 hours, right?
We have 2 hours. We have time for call-ins later on. Please don't call in straight away, because we want to lay out the background here, because it's a relatively new concept. It's an old concept, but a new concept to our today listeners. So, Gene, over to you. You've got until 5 to the hour or thereabouts.
Okay, so, well... So you want to hear my story first.
Of course.
It's intertwined with Jack, so it's I'll kind of cover them both at the same time. But when I was born in 1964, and I was born fully aware, as most people are, and I have vivid recollections of my childhood talking to other beings, talking to my dog. We had a German Shepherd named Duchess, and I had four Peking ducks named Peter, Paul, Mary, and George. And I would, you know, talk to them all the time. I would have beings come and visit me in my bedroom. And I also had a guardian that was a monkey energy, and his name was Gorg. And my parents, they somewhat sarcastically supported my endless supply of invisible friends. But I guess that was a good thing that they supported me, because they could have really been kind of harsh about it, but they weren't. And I remember seeing all kinds of, like I said, all kinds of beings and so forth coming to me when I was young. And then when I was five, a traumatic event sealed off that connection. So I no longer had that connection. And what happened was, one summer night, well, it was 1969, and my parents were having a party, and every night I would put my ducks away before I went to bed. But this night that they said that they would do it, because we were having friends over. And I tried to go to sleep that night, and I couldn't. I kept on thinking that something bad was going to happen. So I would get up from my bed and go to the bedroom window that faced outside. And I would yell, you know, did you put the ducks away yet? No, 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 it's fine. Go back to bed. And I did this a couple of times, and I tried to get to sleep, and I just couldn't. And I guess after a couple of hours, I finally did fall asleep. And I remember very distinctly, I guess I thought I had fallen asleep, and maybe I was in a dream, but I don't really think it was a dream. But Archangel Michael came to me, and he touched my forehead, and he said, it's time to go to sleep now. And not soon after that, I heard a bunch of commotion in the backyard, and I got up from my window, and I could see my mother running around. She had a white shirt on, so I could really see her very clearly, even though it was dark. And I ran outside, and she had blood all over her shirt, and she was holding one of my ducks that I realized very quickly was dead. And my dad walked over, and he was holding one of my other ducks, and that one was injured and ended up ultimately being okay. But it was really that event that turned off my connection.
Why were the ducks dead?
Pardon me?
Why were the ducks dead? Had they been attacked by an animal?
My mother said that they were attacked by a raccoon, but I remember screaming at her. It wasn't a raccoon; it was a fox. So a fox had gotten to them and was able to kill one and injure the other one. Okay. And then in 1998, you know, so during that time from 1969 to 1998. Yeah, I lived my life. I got married. I had two children. I went to college. I became a dental hygienist. I was a Girl Scout leader, you know, just very much a normal person. And in September of 1998, after bugging my husband for a very long time to get a dog, he finally said we could get a dog. So we were driving one night to pick out a puppy. And we only had to go a few miles from our house, but it was storming, it was thundering and lightning, it was just a horrible night. And we were coming up on a traffic light where we would have to make a right-hand turn. And right before I turned, I heard very clearly in my head, take the turn wide and slow. So I did. I slowed down almost to a crawl, and I went halfway in the other lane, and my husband started screaming at me, what are you doing? You're going in the wrong lane. You're going to get us killed. And just as I rounded the corner, there was somebody standing, walking in my lane towards me. And they had a dark hood on, and they had dark clothes on. And I was just kind of startled for a second, because I thought, wow, I could have hit them and killed them or, you know, hurt them. And then we went to go pick out the puppy, and I didn't really think too much about that incident, I guess, until about a week later, and then I just couldn't get it out of my mind. Who was that voice? Where did that come from? What would have happened if I didn't listen to that voice, and it just, I became obsessed with that incident. And not soon after that, I began meeting people that were involved in esoteric arts and healing energy and meditation groups. And very quickly after that, probably within a year, I learned Reiki and I started practicing it. And I actually taught it for quite a few years. And also during that time when I was working with clients and students, I discovered that I could do readings for people. But I kind of shied away from that because I didn't really like it too much. So I found a way to combine doing readings and energy healing at the same time. And also I started working with animals energetically. And I guess about, I don't know, a couple years later, after I woke up again, I started volunteering at a wildlife rehab center. And it was there that I really learned a lot about animals. I was able to, they were very supportive of me. And while I was there, I was able to really hone my skills about how to communicate with animals and how to, it's not so much that I communicate with them, it's more of an empathic connection, really. But anyway, when I was there, I learned a lot. And one day the director, she found out that I could help the animals. So she walked up to me one day and she handed me this baby squirrel. And she said, it's not doing well. Find out what it needs and get back to me. So it was really from then on that they would ask my advice and, you know, can you help this one or can you, you know, what can you do for the animals? For what do they need to feel better or whatever? So I was there for about five years, I guess I was there. And there was one incident that really, was very eye-opening to me because it made me realize that animals really have powerful healing abilities. And it was a young rabbit that was, they call them stargazers. So what happens is that they are, if an animal is in a stargazing position, they're kind of sitting down and their head tilts back so it looks like they're looking up to the sky. And when this happens, it usually, it means that they're gonna end up dying because they stop eating and they stop drinking. And if I remember correctly, it's caused by a parasite that, has infected their brain. So they handed me this little rabbit and they said, you know, before we euthanize it, why don't you see if you can help it in any way? So I was holding this little rabbit in my hand. It was a juvenile rabbit and his head was tilted back and they're just so adorable and so fuzzy. And I started giving him energy and he said to me, I asked him, I said, is there anything I can do for you? And he said, no, but there's something I can do for you. And as I was holding him and I was giving him energy, I could feel energy moving inside my own body. And so I just, even though I was holding him, I just kind of became aware of what was happening in my body. And I get about a couple minutes later, all of a sudden it just felt like there was an eruption inside of my body. And this energy just pulled out from the bottom of my toes out through the top of my head. It was so forceful and so quick that it literally knocked me off balance. I thought I was going to drop the rabbit. And unfortunately, they ended up having to euthanize him. But that incident was, it was stunning to me because I just couldn't believe that this little rabbit would have the ability to do that. And not just have the ability to do that, but have the ability to do it in the condition that he was in. In the physical condition that he was in. I wanted to mention too, so you talked about the whole Rockefeller thing. There was a direct inverse relationship between my finances and my spiritual growth. So when I woke up in 1998, and my husband and I were financially, we were doing really well, and my husband had a wonderful job. And then in 2000, in the middle of 2000, the stock market crashed. And we lost quite a deal of money in the stock market at that point. And then in November of 2000, my husband was called to the corporate office where he worked, and he thought that they were going to give him a bonus or a cut of the company because he had literally made millions of dollars for this company. And well, what they did was they gave him his pink slip. They fired him. And this was right around Thanksgiving. So we had lost a lot of money in the stock market, and now my husband had lost his job. And he ended up starting a business. So we very quickly went through our savings. So it was very interesting that as I woke up spiritually, my finances went down the toilet.
That's normal, I think. From what I can understand, it's the whole rich man, yes, poor man, eye of the needle thingy.
Off to no end.
I know. You have to, yeah, basically you have to go naked.
That's a very good point. Yes, you do. So I just started to put my clothes back on.
Are you decent, love?
Yeah. It's not a video call.
I hope not. Because you wouldn't want to see the frock that I'm wearing. It just doesn't go with my hair at all.
Oh, gosh. All right, so while I was at the Wildlife Rehab Center, I became best friends with the director's daughter, and her name was Leah. And across from where the name of the Wildlife Rehab Center was the Ark. And across the street, one of the neighbors, she was a trainer at a local, at Philadelphia Park, which is a horse racetrack. And, this woman always tried to find really good homes for her retired racehorses. So she had a horse named Noah. So it was always known that when Noah retired from racing, he was going to go to Leah. Because, you know, Leah was the assistant director of the Ark, you know, Noah and the Ark. So it just seemed, it was perfect. It was a perfect match. So when they retired Noah, Leah didn't really know too much about horses. She hadn't had horses since she was a kid. So she asked me to help her ease Noah's transition from being a racehorse to a companion horse. So I said I would help her, and I would go to the farm, and I would ride Noah for her, and it really wasn't much trouble at all. He's a tremendous horse. And then in May of 2006, Leah called me, and she said Noah's brother's being retired, and she said, Pat wants you to have him. Pat was the name of the trainer, which I thought was odd because I had never met Pat. And I didn't even know how she would have heard about me other than just through Leah and helping with Noah. And he was only 4 years old, and I didn't want a 4-year-old horse. I didn't want a thoroughbred. I didn't want a off-the-track thoroughbred. And this horse is huge. If you know how big horses are, he's 17-1. And I'm 4'11". So physically, we are not compatible at all. I wouldn't have been able to show him or to do anything because we just didn't fit each other.
So hang on, Jean. Not everybody understands hands or inches, or feet indeed.
Okay, so 17-1 is 5 feet 10 inches at the shoulder.
5 feet 10 at the shoulder. So if you were to try and climb on that, you'd have to reach up to a 5'10", and you are 4'11". Oh, how cute! Are you?
Correct.
You must be tight.
I need a trampoline.
Or a kind of harness with a what do they call them? A block and tackle. You know, lower you onto it,
exactly.
Like the old knights.
So where was I? Forget what was I? What was, oh, so I this was just not the right horse for me. I just did not, this was not the kind of horse that I had dreamed about. And really, most importantly, I couldn't afford it at the time. We just didn't have, it just coming up with an extra $400 or $500 a month, because I don't have property here where I could, where I could keep him. So it just wasn't, I just kind of remember thinking this is not going to work, but I thought, all right, I'll just go to the racetrack and I'll go look at him. So I went, and Leah and I drove over, and we went to Philadelphia Park, and we met all the horses in the barn, and the last one was mine, and they called him Onesie. They called him Onesie because he was born with a deformed right eye. And so he was the last one, and he was kind of inside of a stall. I didn't even see him when I was there, you know, when I walked down. And the trainer walked into the stall, and all of a sudden he peeked his head out. And I remember literally as soon as I laid eyes on him, I became filled with emotion. And I thought I was going to burst. I just was overcome. Firecrackers went off and everything. And I kind of like to say that I had love at first sight twice, once with my husband and once with my horse.
There's nothing wrong with that, because we now discover that we'll find out soon that Jack is more than just a horse. It's not some weird stuff. There's something else going on, isn't there, Jean?
Exactly. Yes. So the Pat was inside the stall, and she unhooked the stall guard, and she said, "Come on in." And I just remember petting him and touching his neck, and I couldn't hold back. I had to cry. I just was overcome with emotion. And, you know, I was embarrassed because I didn't know this woman, and here I am bawling my eyes out in front of her. And she said, "I just want you to know how special this horse is. And we're very happy that you're going to give him a good home and take care of him." So he wasn't supposed to be retired until, this was May, and he wasn't supposed to be retired until, the end of August or September of 2006. So I thought I'd have time to save up money, and I'd have time to tell my husband. And so I had, you know, a few months to kind of figure out how I was going to pull this off. I guess it was about a week later, and Leah called me and she said, "Onesie has to go by the end of next week. They have to get him out of Philadelphia Park because he got injured." So what happens is if you have a horse that's injured, they can't stay at the barn at the park to recover. You have to send them out to a what they call a layup barn. So that was the maximum, that week and a half, 2 week period was the maximum amount that they could keep him at the track. Actually, I think they kind of had to hide that he was even injured. And I just remember just thinking, I can't do this. There's no way in 2 weeks that I'm going to be able to pull this all together and make it work out. And I just kind of started freaking out because I'd already kind of bonded myself to him, and I had dreams about him and just already kind of decided he was my horse. So I had about a week and a half to try to get myself together, and I already had a place for him. And I remember thinking, all right, you know what, universe, if you really want me to have this horse, you need to let me know beyond a shadow of a doubt that this is A, the right horse for me, and B, that it's not going to be a financial burden on my family. And within an hour or two, I had literally multiple people call me. They were interested in Reiki classes and other, you know, having sessions with me. So that just happened almost after I asked the question. So that for me was confirmation that, okay, so this is the horse for me and this is what I'm supposed to do. And so I guess I had about a week to go before I had to get him. so I arranged to have him trailered. And the last hurdle was telling my husband. So I had two options, two ways I was going to try to coerce him into having me get this horse.
Let me guess. Number one, darling, I want an entire race course. Oh, well, how about just one horse? Yeah. Or, darling, can I have a pet? Yes. All right, I want a horse. Which approach did you quite take?
What's that?
What was your approach? Maybe it's a...
All right, so, well, my two options were, well, I'll just go with option number one, because I didn't have to go to option number two. Option number one was getting him drunk. So... It was, and you probably can figure out what option number two was. So it was a wild night. And I remember, what's that?
Feminine wiles, dear. Feminine wiles.
Exactly. It was a weeknight, and I poured him, we didn't have any beer, which would have been his preference, but, I poured him a pint of wine. So what you would serve somebody a pint of beer in, I filled that up with wine.
Holy crap.
And I handed it to him. And I think I gave him, I had to have given him three or four. He was pretty bombed. And I guess around midnight, he looked at me and he said, "Are you trying to get me drunk?" And I said, "Well, yes, honey, I am." And I thought, all right, well, you know what? I'm just going to spit it out. So I told him, I said, you know, this Leah's friend has this horse for me. They want me to have him. And, you know, I went into this big thing and I looked over at him and he had this smile on his face. And I looked at him and I said, "What?" And he said, "You didn't have to get me drunk." He said, I know how much this means to you and how you've always dreamed of having a horse. I had a horse when I was a child, but, you know, that was obviously a long time ago. And he said, I know that this is a dream of yours and I, there's no way I would stand in the way of you fulfilling your dream. So he said, well, you know, don't, we'll figure it out. We'll work it out. We'll, you know, it'll be fine. Don't worry about it. And so he was fine with it, which really surprised me because I thought it was going to be a big, you know,
hard job, yes.
To convince him than it was. So I got him on June 17th, which was my mother's birthday. And I remember when the trailer, I was at the barn and the trailer was pulling down the driveway. And the driveway is about a quarter of a mile long. And you could hear him screaming from that far away, nonstop screaming, not whinnying, screaming like a banshee. And I could see the trailer was rocking. And I thought, oh, my God. And my heart just sunk right into my stomach because I thought, I just made the biggest mistake of my life. And when the trailer pulled up, it terrified me because I thought, I actually had to have the owner of the farm take him off the trailer because I just couldn't. I was too scared. He was all lathered up and he practically ran her over getting out of the trailer. And we had to hose him off and walk him around. And he screamed and screamed and screamed for hours, literally until he became hoarse and lost his voice.
Oh, bless his heart. When you spoke to him later, was he screaming as a discharge from the moving, or was he screaming because he was being very, he felt very uncomfortable?
No, I will tell you why he was screaming. So about a week later, my witching hour is between 3 and 5 in the morning. That's when I get a lot of my good information. So he came to me in that time period and he flashed me visions of him running in big purse races. Now the people that trained him, for some reason, they babied him and they didn't seem to recognize his potential. So they wouldn't put him in big races and they wouldn't give him the good jockeys. They would put him in these small races and they would accentuate the fact that he had a bum eye. And he was showing me visions of him winning, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And he was pissed that his humans did not recognize his potential. And this was a recurring theme in his life, is that humans have underestimated how intelligent he is and how athletic he is, and they failed over and over to recognize his potential. So that's one of my missions, is to make sure that that does not happen again. So that's why he was so angry, was because he wanted to stay at the racetrack. And after he had, and the injury that they retired him for was ridiculous. In fact, a lot of trainers would have even raced him with that injury, which would have been fine. It wasn't enough to cause any permanent damage or anything like that. And after I had had him for a couple of weeks, I actually called them up and I said, you know, he's 100%. He's ready to come back to racing if you want him back. And they said, absolutely not. Absolutely not. We do not want him back. We're just done. He's yours and that's it.
Oh, I can really feel for, you know, you're really pulling the compassion energy here, because, we're all seeing things from the horse's point of view, which is beautiful. So keep going.
Okay. So, well, you know, Nancy, Jack was Patton's horse in the Olympics, and this was one of the things that Jack was so angry about with the Olympics, because had he trusted Jack, they would have won. And
I'm going to jump in here and confirm that, because, and it's exactly what you said, Patton did not believe that that horse could do the turn he was making, and he thought he was stumbling, corrected him, and that's what lost the Olympics, and Jack was pissed.
Yeah. So Jack's got a history. I just want to fill in for our audience. What just happened there is that Gene was talking about a past life of Jack the horse as the horse that was ridden by General Patton during his performance at the Olympics. When and where was that, Nancy? And why did you know about this? Just tell everybody, please.
Well,
it was the 1912 Olympics.
Yes, here she goes. She knows this. I know that George Patton was a previous lifetime of mine, and I have a lot of connection with him, but I had no idea that he was at the Olympics. None. In all my knowledge of him, it never was brought forth that he was in the Olympics. And Gene calls me up and tells me that Jack is pissed off because Patton lost the Olympics. And I'm going like, Patton wasn't in the Olympics. And so I go online and I find a Google thing. Not only does it have a picture of Patton in the Olympics he's on a horse jumping. And that's Jack. So, I mean, within, you know, I had absolutely no clue. And then all of a sudden, Jack is telling Gene, and Gene tells me, and boom, we've got a photograph depicting that very event. That's how magical this whole story is.
So this is a story that not only, so we start off with somebody who, literally, do you remember Esther and Abby O'Farim from the 1960s? Did you have this thing? Do you remember this song? I'm your Cinderella, you're my Rockefeller. Ooh, do you remember that?
No, I don't.
Gene?
I don't either. I'll have to look it up, though.
I'm going to have to dig it out, because it was, you know, it was like Cinderella and Rockefeller. Like fantasy of the girls that every girl is a princess and everyone will marry a millionaire, you know, and it was just it's just a thing that came through. So anyway, this thing is spanning lifetimes now. So we're now looking back at Jack's life as a previous horse. But Gene, do you have experience of you being involved in that life with General Patton?
No. And, you know, it's interesting because Jack and I are so connected, he'll give me images and images of things, like flashbacks of things. And that's how I was able to kind of piece this whole thing together. But, you know, it's interesting because an important point. We can talk about it more later, but an important point is that watchers, you don't pick a watcher. A watcher picks you. So, you know, and that's what Jack did with Patton when his mare couldn't make the trip, the mare that he had been training on for years, when she couldn't make the trip to the Olympics, Patton had to go to, I think it was the Swedish Army Barracks.
Yes.
And that's,
yes, it was, yes.
And he was going in the barn trying to pick out a horse, and Jack actually grabbed Patton's shoulder and picked him. So that was, Jack picked Patton, knowing that he had a chance to win. But, I'll get back to my story.
Yeah. I was just going to say, let's take that Bywater back to the mainstream.
Okay, good. All right. So, where was I? All right. So I had gotten Jack in 2006, and, I did a lot of energy work with him, trying to help him release, you know, being a racehorse and just being a companion horse. And he turned out to be a great companion horse. My husband actually learned how to ride on him. And I could basically do anything with him. I could take him out on trails, and he was just a wonderful horse. And then everything changed in 2008. In 2008, at least as far as the watchers go, that's when things were really starting to rev up energetically. A lot of energy was coming into the earth. Gaia was starting to really churn with energy, and the watchers really came online at that point. Energetically. So in 2008, Jack broke his leg. He was kicked by another horse, and he broke his right rear leg, and right below the stifle. So the stifle is actually their kneecap, but their kneecap on their hind leg is way up towards, kind of towards their thigh. And he had a big open oozing sore where he had been kicked. So, you know, we called the vet, and the vet came out, and he looked at it, and he said, you know, it doesn't look that bad, but he said, I'm gonna take some x-rays. And Jack had to be cross-tied in his stall. So he literally was shackled inside of his stall. He couldn't, for fear that if he, because Jack liked to lay down. And if he laid down, obviously putting pressure to get back up would just be catastrophic on a broken leg. So, the vet took x-rays, and he called me later on, and he said, you know, it's not that bad. It's just he's got a longitudinal fracture, but it's really not that bad. He should heal up. He's a young horse. He should be fine. But he said, you know, contact me if that sore stops draining, because that literally could drain for 6 to 8 weeks. But if it stops draining, you know, within a week or so, he said, that's a really good sign, and call me back out, and I'll take some more x-rays. So, I have a friend who works with homeopathic remedies. So she was giving me remedies. Obviously, I was doing energy work on him, and within 5 days, that sore stopped oozing, and within 7 days, it crusted over. So I called the vet, and I said, you know, that it stopped oozing. Do you want to come out? And he said, oh yes, I'll come out, and I'll take more x-rays. I'll take a look at it. So he took more x-rays. And he called me later on that afternoon, and he said, I have good news and I have bad news. And he said, the bad news is that it's a lot worse than I thought. He said, not only was there a longitudinal break, but there was also a big horizontal component to the break that I didn't see on the original x-ray with the views that I took. And he said, had I known that, the outcome would have been a lot different. Because he said that the break is a lot worse than I originally thought. But he said the good news is he's healing at a miraculous rate. So he said, we're just going to keep doing what we're doing. He's doing fine, and you keep doing what you're doing, and I'll come out in about 3 weeks, and we'll get some more x-rays and see how things are progressing. So he came back out at 3 weeks. Now, you know, keep in mind, a horse needs to put his head down to eat and to drink, and Jack's head was elevated up. So when I would go up to see him, I'd let him off of the cross ties in the stall, and he would go into spasms sometimes. His whole body, all the muscles would spasm because it was just so, he couldn't move. Literally, he couldn't move. And that was very unnatural for a horse to be contained in one space. And the other thing that I have to mention too is, for a horse, for a young horse, for a thoroughbred that was used to going outside 8 to 10 hours a day, and for him to be locked up in a stall, not just locked up in a stall, but tied in a stall, he took it like a champ. I mean, he rolled with the punches, and he didn't get upset. He didn't get angry. He didn't get anything. It was like he knew that this was supposed to happen, and he was going to be okay, and he was going to get through it, and it was just, you know, a part of life that he was going to have to overcome. So the vet came out 3 weeks later, and he took more x-rays, and he said, you know, this break is where I would expect it to be at 6 or 7 weeks. He said, I can't believe how quickly he's healing. So at that point, I was able to walk him around. We had an indoor ring at the farm where I was, and I was able to hand walk him a couple of times a day, which was extremely scary because Jack's a big horse. You know, he's about 1,250 pounds, and I'm not very big. And walking a horse that had been locked up in a stall for 3 weeks, and now all of a sudden he could actually walk around, it felt like I was walking a ticking time bomb. And I just thought at any moment he was going to take off and run around the ring. But it was fine, and it all turned out good, and he healed up. But after he broke his leg, he became unrideable. I could not ride him. And sometimes I could. It would depend. But for the most part, he couldn't be ridden. He just became dangerous, downright dangerous. And I had multiple people multiple trainers trying to ride him, and I thought about selling him. I thought about leasing him. I thought about all kinds of things because he just, you know, here I was paying for this horse, but I really couldn't do anything with him. And I can explain why later. I didn't understand at the time what was going on, but later on I realized what was happening, and there was really no way. He was bringing in too much energy, not only from working with Gaia, but he was also working with, you know, galactic beings, working with their energy. So there's just no way he could do that and be ridden at the same time. So that was in 2008 when he broke his leg. And then, like I said, for really even until now, up until now, I can't really ride him too much. But I didn't really know that I hadn't heard anything about, I didn't know what a watcher was at that point. It wasn't until January of 2012 that a friend of mine who lives in St. Augustine, Florida, she called me up and she said, I met this really extraordinary German Shepherd, long-haired German Shepherd on the beach today. And she said, I took his picture, and she said, when you get a minute, can you just connect to him? Because I'm telling you, there's something really extraordinary about this dog. And I was kind of reluctant to, because I don't like to do things like that. I kind of feel like I'm invading somebody's privacy by not gaining permission to do those kinds of things. And bless her heart, she was really persistent and continued to persist that I connect to this dog. So I did, and I she sent me a picture of him, and I sat down at my computer one night, and I had a short conversation with him. And he's adorable because the picture that she sent me, his tongue's hanging out, and he has these three big dark spots on his tongue that just are, you know, I guess hypermelanized areas on his tongue, but he's really neat looking dog. So anyway, I sat down and I had a short conversation with him, and he didn't really say anything that I thought was mind blowing. And at the end of the conversation, he said, I'm a watcher. And I said, okay, thank you very much, Thor, for, you know, sitting with me and having this conversation. For having this conversation. So I called my friend, and I told her what Thor had said, and I said, oh, by the way, he said he's a watcher. And she got all excited. She said, well, what's a watcher? I said, I have no idea. I said, I've never heard an animal call themselves a watcher before. So she got on the internet and she was emailing me all this stuff about watchers and fallen angels and all kinds of stuff. And I said, you know, none of that really feels right. And, I guess after about the fifth or sixth thing she sent me, she said, well, why don't you just ask Jack what a watcher is? I said, okay. So, a day or two later, I was at the barn, and my skills are, I'm very good at remote work. So standing next to an animal, trying to communicate with them is very difficult for me because I do everything remotely.
That's something that I can really relate to, is that I can tune into somebody on the other side of the planet. But if they're in the room, there are certain things that kind of interfere. Like, it's like my animal body gets involved in it, which completely skews the picture. Is that what you find as well?
No, I agree with you there. And also, there's too many other, like you said, there's too many other things to focus on. And it's hard to communicate with your own animals because you have that emotional energy that's in there. So in addition to just having all the extraneous interruptions and interferences, you have this emotional component that you don't have with other people's animals. And you don't have that emotional component when you work remotely because it's just, there's nothing else going on. Really, that you're seeing. You're not seeing their body language. You're not seeing anything else. You're not feeling any of the other energy. So I was at the, Jack and I had developed this body language. So he will actually shake his head yes or no if I ask him questions. And if he feels like answering them, sometimes he doesn't feel like answering them and I'll just kind of get the stink eye. But so I was grooming him one night and I said, Jack, do you know what a watcher is? And he shook his head yes. And then he can also, and he's very good at, If he wants me to hear something, he can plow it into my head. And he said, I'm a watcher. And I asked him a couple more questions, but I guess that's all he wanted me to know at that time because he didn't say anything else. And I guess that was, well, like I said, that was in January of 2012 that I first heard about watchers. And then about a week later, I was at work as a dental hygienist and I was working on a patient. And all of a sudden I could smell that Jack was with me because that's one way I know that he's there with me. And then all of a sudden he just started giving me all these directives in my head. I want you to create a website. I want you to create a blog called Jack's Corner. I'm going to share healing and information on this blog.
Just a minute. Hang on a second. Your horse wanted a website. How did he even know what a website was?
Jack knows a lot of things.
You know, I'm just saying, you know, like, well, does he have a special keyboard?
When I sit down to write a message, he's literally with me, writing the message with me as I'm typing it. So, what was I saying? Oh, so anyway, I was kind of overwhelmed at this point because he's in my head saying that I want you to create a website. You know, I have to mention too, I had been trying to create a website for years. And I guess after about the fourth or fifth attempt, I just gave up because I crashed a computer trying to build a website. I couldn't download software. I finally gave up. And as soon as he said that he wanted me to create a website, I literally did it in about 3 hours. I created an entire website in about 3 hours. And I'm not a computer genius,
well,
by
and,
any
you know,
stretch of the imagination.
In some ways, the technology was you were waiting for the technology to happen. Because a few years ago, doing a website was a real pain in the butt. But now with WordPress and Weebly, it's a cinch. So anyone can do it now. But in, you know, 5 years ago, that was impossible for anybody who had no technical information. I was doing it for people, and I hated doing it because it was such a fiddle. Now it's so easy, you know, because it's, well, anyway, this is what we call fourth generation computing. Go on, Jean. So Jack asked you to make a website, and did he give you the name for it as well? Did he give you the .com?
Yeah, he wanted, well, the website was for me. It was for, you know, what I was doing energetically. And then he wanted me to create a blog called Jack's Corner. And that's where, and originally my blog was connected to my website, or Jack's blog was connected to my website. But I've had to move it a couple times because I had problems with it getting hacked. But it was interesting because while I was sitting there working on the patient, you know, I have sharp instruments in my hand, and he's blasting all this information in my head. I had to excuse myself from the patient and get up and go into the dark room. And I just said, Jack, you know, we can have this conversation when I get home. I can't do this right now. Why are you doing this right now? And he said, because basically you're not paying attention. You're not trying to hear me. So if I come to you at work when you least expect it, you're less apt to dismiss what I'm telling you, and you're more apt to trust what I'm getting. You know,
quite insistent.
Yeah, he's a big pain in the ass. So about a week later, I started writing his message, and I remember sitting at the computer writing it down, and I was blown away by what he told me. And also his first message contained, actually, I think that his first 10 messages contained healing rays. And I couldn't write the whole message in at one sitting. I had to do it in increments because I was getting bombarded with the energy as I was writing the message. And I later realized it wasn't just coming from Jack. It was coming from Jack and I together. So it was our converging together that was creating this energy. So after I got done, it took me about 2 weeks to write the message. And I got done on a Saturday night. And I remember I got up and I went in the bathroom. And the energy ray that was shared in that first message was an energy called the pumpkin ray. And I got up and I went into the bathroom and I looked and I looked around and everything was orange. And I looked in the mirror and I just had this orange glow around me. And I remember thinking, like, okay, this is, I guess this is real. This is really happening. Because I had a hard time, I don't know, it seemed to be a very hairy pill to swallow in the very beginning, you know, horse gives girl message, horse gives girl healing energies, you know, and it was kind of incredulous to me, but, you know, fortunately I got over that. So that's basically my story.
Wow. So, you know, of course there are people in the chat room who are saying, ah, sounds like the inspiration for Mr. Ed. Is that, I mean, I don't know, are you familiar with Mr. Ed?
Well, you know, it's funny that that's mentioned because I often joke that that I probably watched too many reruns of Mr. Ed when I was a kid.
Well, I mean, has actually Jack spoken about that? I mean, is that like a kind of predictive programming model, or was it actually another horse that had telepathic awareness and perhaps even was a watcher? Are there other horse watchers, or is there just like one watcher who's a horse, one who's an owl, you know, one who's a cat?
All right, so let me tell you what watchers are. Watchers are sentient beings that are cloaked in animal form. They are highly evolved. They are highly aware beings. And all of their seven senses are fully functioning. So in addition to sight, taste, hearing, feeling, smelling, they have intuition and inner vision. And And they have a deep connection to Gaia, which they are well aware of, and that's where they get their healing abilities from. So I have a rooster. His name is Voltaris, and he told me that he is a sentient being that's in animal form. He's a galactic being, and he's working for the greater good. But what sets him apart from the Watchers is that he does not have healing abilities. So there are animals.
And he doesn't even lay eggs.
No, he doesn't. Well, his name was Dottie for a while because we thought he was a hen.
Oh, your animals have come from strange homes, haven't they?
Yes, they have.
Yeah.
Yes, they have.
Oh, I felt with Jack along, you know, to see somebody, to understand from his point of view that he knew about his potential, but nobody could see it. You know, isn't that everybody's story? Isn't that the story of the ugly duckling and the whole, all that sort of stuff? Hey, we're at the top of the hour. We'll be about 5 minutes with some commercials, and we'll be back. Stay with us, Gene Watt Rockefeller and Jack the Watcher. And welcome back to Journeys with JP on Revolution Radio, a 100% homegrown, organic, GMO-free radio station broadcasting across the planet from various websites, including revolution-radio.com, freedomslips.com, and there is some new combination that you're going to have to tell me about, Hawk, because I'm quite good at it. Because I tried revolution.radio, and that didn't work. So I don't know exactly where how to take it. But if you wish to keep supporting the station, we have no commercial things. We have the thing at the top of the hour, basically advertising other shows. So please, if you can, the best thing is to subscribe. If you don't want to subscribe and you want to make a kind of one-off generous donation, you can do things like buy T-shirts and... Actually, can you get T-shirts? Anyway, but you can certainly buy the seed pack, which is what I recommend. And last year, a wonderful listener who's actually listening right now... Is he? Yeah. Is he gone? No, he's gone. Swami, I just want to put a shout out to Swami, bought two seed packs for himself, and he bought me one, and I'm going to be using the seeds again this year. There's thousands of them, they're in my freezer, and it's a really good donation because it gives you something in return, as well as 24/7 two stations, one for each hemisphere of your brain. Studio A and Studio B on Revolution Radio. Likewise, Wolf Spirit Radio is a subscriber-supported and listener-donated station, and we take donations. We also have a vast back catalogue of 4 years of some of the most amazing cutting-edge interviews with some of the luminaries of the now. Back in the days when they weren't so big and they talked to people like us. So, and then there's everbeyondradio.com, which is my own personal station. Ever Beyond is my kind of flagship radio show on Sunday, part of the alternative Sunday service, an 8-hour stint of my radio production. We talk about energetics, healing. We do live healing on the show. We use the morphological field of the planet and the listenership to tune in and perform healing operations. We do psychic surgery, entity removal, cord cutting, all sorts of good stuff. And we train you how to do it. And Wolf Spirit Radio supports that. That's onenessinthelight.com, Frank Jordan and the Earth Mind Think Tank Group. Okay, we also have Tina Sow Radio coming out of Ireland. And we also have Scottish Sovereigns on the Land coming out of my dear home, Scotland. So, welcome to all of these people. And if you wish to support any of these, please go to their relevant websites. You'll find them all on Ever Beyond Radio. That's the nexus of stuff about JP's. And I've also just started a new a new website of mine, which is called the Crown Base Transmissions, which is my sort of version of Jack's Corner, really. It's the things that my guidance has been telling me for these years that I've never really quite believed, and now it's all kind of it's coming true. It's fascinating. It's fascinating to see the stuff. You know, I got into, you know, watching Cliff High and all these things around 2009, 2010, and this guidance was talking about the same stuff that they've been predicting too. Except I forgot about it. I just did it. I just wrote it down one night, and over the last Christmas holiday, I started pulling it all together into a database and being able to search it. And there's amazing things that are coming out. So I thought I'd make a website, and that's called the Crown. That's called CrownBaseTransmissions.com, call it what you like. I don't know if it's a spirit guides or if it's God's voice or whatever. But we have fun. It's a good relationship. Could be my crew in a spaceship. I don't really know.
It's a great site. Anybody out there, you should go there, because when you read what he wrote back in the old days and how relevant it is today, it's stunning. It is very much a confirmation of what's happening. So I highly recommend it. And the website, one more time there, Jay, is?
Crown. From your crown. It's basically, you know, I asked my guys, right, okay, what shall I call it? And I just felt my crown center tingle, my base center tingle, and I thought, oh yeah, crown base, crown to base. From my crown center, my higher self, to my base center, my lower self, and the conversation between them. And, you know, as Cliff High says, we're all psychic, and your crown center is what's picking up the stuff. That's why you have long hair. If you grow your hair long, this is the reason is because it's connecting in with your crown center, and they're basically antennae for your crown center. This is how Maria Orsic, the Vrildarman in the 1920s and 30s, was able to contact Aldebaran because of the length of her hair was able to be used as a psychic aerial. Anyway, long story. Hair, crown, base. So it's called the Crown Base Transmissions. So, crownbasetransmissions.com. And it's evolving as I go. I've got a forum, sort of, if anybody wants to kind of start discussing this stuff. I don't know if it's worthwhile discussing, but if you want to, you can subscribe as a member and join the forum and start, you know, maybe even adding your own stuff from similar periods of time, and see if we can work out if we've all been given pieces of a very large puzzle that has taken years to assemble. Anyway, having said all that, my guest tonight...
I thought it was brilliant, and that's what we need to do. We need to start opening up to everybody, just like Jean is doing tonight. I am absolutely blown away with what she's doing, because she is presenting the story as she saw it, as it happened, with just such clarity. It's a great story, and to know that it's true, because I can tell you, I've been their friends for 3 years, and I have only seen absolutely amazing knowledge and talents come from both Jack and Jean. So, you know, what she's sharing with us tonight is just a gift. You know, like I say, I've known her for 3 years, and this is just such a great way of presenting what really happened. So, and but your idea of the crown base concept that we've got to share, because other people took notes too.
Exactly. Sure. This is the journal. And, you know, I got to add as well, you know, most of the time when I would have this conversation is when I was in a really emotional soup. You know, something had upset me that I had nobody else that I could talk to apart from my own imagination, as I put it at the time, and so I would have these conversations, and I kept them all on the computer. But what I realized is that in between all the personal stuff, if you strip that away, every time I got together with them, they would drop me a nugget. They'd give me a little piece of information, and that's what I've been publishing. The stuff around it that got me to the point of having nobody else to talk to but my imaginary friends, got to the point where I was just taking down what they were saying and listening to what they were doing, what they were talking about calming my own personal situation down. And they managed to slip in all this great prophetic and spiritual and sometimes quite magnificent, sometimes poetic stuff that came in there. And, you know, I've forever asked them, who are you? And they keep saying, we're you in the future. And now I'm discovering certain kinds of journeying that brings me to understand exactly what that means, and I'm starting to be able to connect with my past self on a psychic level, which is getting very interesting. So more on that later. I haven't really explored that very much, but there's some interesting things that are going on in the psyche. And I think it's not just me, it's everybody. So, good afternoon, Gene Rockefeller, cousin of the billionaires, but we are here in your capacity as webmaster for a horse called Jack, who describes himself as a fully conscious seven-sense being who is also known as a watcher. So, when we last left you, you'd been talking about watchers, and that your friend had looked through all the material that she could find on the web, and none of it really sounded like the watchers that Jack was describing. So, do you want to take it up from there, Jean?
Sure. I've asked the question about it, about, you know, what the watchers are, and trying to get a little bit more specific information about it. I haven't gotten anything cohesive to this point. I've just gotten dribs and drabs, so I don't really feel like I could talk about it intelligently, because I honestly don't know the history of it myself. And you know, working with the watchers, it's I'm very much on a need-to-know basis. So they tell me things that I need to know when I need to know it. I know that's not probably a very good answer, but that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay. So from what you understand so far, what do the watchers do? And how do they relate to you? Because, you know, you're somebody who's got... You know, you've got your own will and your own mind, and you're working alongside them. What's the kind of mission, so to speak?
Well, their mission is very simple. It's to serve the greater good and to serve Gaia, and to help to elevate the whole Gaia collective, participating in our evolution. You know, and if you go back to the horse, if you just think about it for a second. And not even thinking about the esoteric aspect of the horse that we're talking about today, but if you think about it in concrete terms, you know, where would our human civilization be without the horse? So if you erase the horse from history, where would we be now? Because we use the horse as a war machine, as a tank, as our transportation. It helped to feed our civilizations because we used it as a plow. So if you took that out of the equation, things would be a lot different in our world today.
They certainly would be. So the horse is, you know, it's probably, I don't know, they seem so strong and yet so vulnerable, so sensitive, you know. When I'm around horses, they get nervous, I get nervous, you know, I don't know. But they sense our field so strongly and so keenly. Sometimes I wonder, if we could sense our field that keenly, would we behave the same way we did towards each other, if we could sense what each other was like in that field, the way that animals and horses can read us. So you've been speaking, you know, you've been communicating with them, and do you do it? When I communicate with my crown-based thing, It's like I send them a text message and they send me a zip file with a paragraph in it, encoded as a feeling. So that I don't get words, but I make the feeling into words because it's a complete understanding of something. Is that the sort of thing, or do you get words dictated one by the other?
Well, it really depends on the situation because, you know, when I sit down to write Jack's messages, depending on the kind of information that he wants me to share and how he wants me to share it and the energy that he wants me to share over the message, that dictates how I get the information. So sometimes it's just a conversational thing where I'll sit down and he literally merges his energy with mine and takes over my fingers and types. And those are the easy ones because I don't really have to do a whole lot. And then other times it's, we're working together. And when I communicate with other animals, it's kind of like you were saying, it's more of an empathic connection, with just a sense of knowing that that's what it, that that's really right. So it's a connection to my inner self and my inner knowing. But again, it depends on the animals because some animals communicate better through their feelings and their emotions, and other animals communicate better through they're more telepathic, they're more visual. But you know, I'd like to mention something too. I don't necessarily call myself an animal communicator. I refer to myself as a healing facilitator, and whatever I need to be able to do at that time to facilitate healing is what I do. So I have a lot of tools in my toolbox that I can draw from. So when I'm working with somebody or if I'm working with a client, whether it be a person or an animal, if I need to be a medium in that moment, I can be a medium. Or if I need to be a medical intuit, I can be a medical intuit. So, or if I need to be a channel or if I need to go on a shamanic journey, if I need to do a power retrieval, whatever I need to do in that moment to facilitate healing is what I do. And I do the same thing when I work with animals. So whatever I need to, however I need to communicate in that moment to help to facilitate their healing is what I do. But I wouldn't call myself an animal communicator because I don't necessarily communicate the way that they do, the way that an animal communicator would. I can't turn it on and off. It's more of just under the umbrella of being a healing facilitator.
I see. So, and again, I experience the same thing. You get the powers as you need them, when you need them, and then maybe they stay for a few days, but they kind of drift away again until they're needed again. But it's each one of them presents a precedent of like, wow, I didn't know I could do that. How many times a week do you get that feeling?
Well, in the beginning when I first started doing this, it was really frustrating because I did a thing where I channeled Archangel Michael. So I would go around to people's homes and I would channel Archangel Michael, and then boom, that just stopped. I couldn't do it anymore. And then I could do something else, and I thought, oh, okay, now I'm supposed to be doing this. And then boom, it would stop. And it took me quite a while to realize that I'm not this, or I'm not a channel, or I'm not that. It's just all these little, I'm basically a master at being a jack of all trades.
Very interesting. So, because, you know, these are things, this is, you're expressing these abilities and qualities in service. It's not like you've been studying for years to levitate as a yogini and doing all these spiritual practices. It's just as and when it's needed, that's what you can do. And I think that's probably the most natural way to evolve in service. That's what we're on, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and that's part of the thing about the Watchers. Their biggest thing is they are in service of the greater good. And I've been working with energy for, you know, since, like I said, since 1999. And almost from the beginning, the animals were training me to use the energy that they use for healing. So it was the Watchers were, I didn't really, even before I knew what the Watchers were and that they had healing abilities, but they were training me how to do this. And it took me a little while to figure out, well, why are my animals always in my healing space when I'm working with a client? And it was about, it was about 2 years ago, Jack actually gave me a demonstration of the energy that he works with and that I was getting, I don't want to say attuned to, but I guess it's really a remembrance. And, I can share that story with you if you'd like.
Oh, please.
Oh, okay. We had gotten a round pen at our farm, and Jack doesn't like new things, so I thought I would just go up one afternoon and I'd take the opportunity just to introduce him to it rather than wait until later on. So I had an afternoon off and I went up to the barn and I took Jack out of the pasture and took him down to the round pen, and I was just going to exercise him a little bit, just have him move around a little bit in it and just have him, he was sniffing it and eating the grass in it and just kind of checking it out. And he was, you know, as he was moving around, all of a sudden, he stopped and he looked at me and he said, "We are one." And I thought, oh great, here it comes, something's going to happen. So I braced myself. And suddenly, he just took off in this. Now, this round pen is, I'm trying to think how many feet wide it is. I think it's like 40 feet in diameter is how big it was. So he said, we are one. And like I said, I braced myself. And then he started taking off, tearing around this round pen. He was cutting through. I thought he was going to run me over. And all of a sudden, at the same time, a big gust of wind blew and a flock of birds just absolutely flew out of nowhere. I couldn't even tell where they came from. They just appeared behind this, this bunch of trees that were right by the ring. And also I could hear hooves thundering down in the lower pasture, and I knew that the horses were coming up from the lower pasture towards us. So they would probably come up to the fence line. And so I was kind of extraneously looking at all these other things, but at the same time, I was trying to figure out how I was going to get Jack to calm down. And then suddenly, I felt like I had been punched in the gut. And I literally dropped to my knees, and then it felt like I just felt sobs erupting from somewhere deep inside of me, and I just was overtaken. It was like I had an out-of-body experience because I was crying so hard. And I don't really know how long I was there in the middle of the round pen crying on my knees. And when I finally stopped and I was composed myself, I looked up and Jack was just standing there, standing quietly, staring at me. And I remember looking at him, and I was kind of overwhelmed from the whole experience. So I thought, you know what? We're just going to go back to your stall now. We've just had enough of the round pen. So I took him back to the stall. And I walked out to my car because I was going to get him a snack and before I put him back out in the pasture. So I walked out to my car. I came back. I was gone 20 seconds. And I looked in on him and he was shaking violently. Now I had only seen this horse this shaking this much two times before. One was, when the barn flooded and his stall was flooding and he thought he was drowning and he's terrified of water. And the other time was when, two horses came to the farm and they brought some really bad energy with them. So those were really the only times that I had ever seen him elicit such fear. And I couldn't imagine what happened in the 20 seconds from the time I put him in the stall to the time I walked out to my car and came back to see him, that he was, you know, literally in a full blown panic. So I thought, all right, I'll walk in the stall and I'll give him some energy and I'll calm him down. And so I went in, and when I touched him, he was on fire. I mean, he was literally his skin was on fire. And I thought he was dying, because anything that would come on that fast or that violently, I figured it had to be catastrophic. So I walked out of the stall and I started panicking and I started pacing, and I'm thinking, what do I do? Do I call the vet? Do I call? 'Cause I was there by myself. do I get a trailer hooked up? Do I take him off to the clinic? Do I take his temperature? What do I do? And then I finally composed myself enough to realize that if Jack really needed something, he would be able to communicate it to me. So I just kind of calmed myself down, and I walked back into the stall, and I touched Jack, and I said, you know, I said, what do you need me to do? What do you need from me? And he said, nothing. I don't need anything. He said, I'm fine. I'll be fine in about 10 minutes. We are just clearing energy. And I took this time to release us from some very old energy, and also to demonstrate the healing power that lies within Mother Earth. And he also told me at this time that this is the energy, like I said, that this is the energy that I was being, quote unquote, trained to learn how to use. So he said, you know, he was going to be fine in about 15 minutes, and I was going to feel it for about at least a couple weeks to come. And I did. That whole experience really knocked me for a loop. And I stayed there. I hosed him off because he was sweating, and it took him about, I guess I stayed there for about a half an hour, and I just walked him around, and he, it was like somebody turned a switch, because he was suddenly fine. I mean, as quickly as it came on, that quickly it dissipated. And, after I hosed him off, I just put him out in the pasture, and he trotted out like there was, you know, like nothing had happened. So to me, that was really, I knew that I had been working with the energy of Gaia. I knew I had been working with my animals. You know, I would email people, and one of my cats would jump up on the computer and say, you know, leave the email open. I'm sending energy. Or, you know, tell so-and-so this. Or, you know, I have a little message form or something like that. But I never actually had that moment, that incident that Jack showed me really was a very powerful demonstration of the energy that the animals have the ability to connect to, and that is lying inside of Gaia, that is really an untapped resource.
And would you say that it's also available to the human animal, like the human being, in our lower senses, but they're kind of all tangled up with all sorts of other stuff, that we don't have access to this same healing energy, or at least some of us do and some of us don't, you know, people call themselves healers, but I believe, like I think you do, that everybody can heal.
Well, I like to say that, you know, if you can read, you can cook. It's the same kind of thing. Everyone has the ability to heal. It's just some people are more, they're more in alignment with it, and they're more proficient at it because that's what they're here to do. And absolutely, everyone has the ability to ask Gaia for help. You know, we have this wonderful resource, wonderful untapped resource right below our feet. And a lot of people are spending their time, you know, looking up in the stars for help, when we should be looking right below our feet and asking Mother Earth for help. Because the more we help ourselves, the more we help her, the more we help ourselves. It's a continuous loop.
Because we constitute part of her consciousness.
We are part of the Gaia Collective. So the Gaia Collective is the sum total of every single being that lives on this planet. And we are all part of that Gaia Collective. We try to separate ourselves from it. You know, on one hand, we're this insidious virus that's drilling holes in her and sucking gas out of her and polluting her. And then on the other hand, we're this wonderful collective of light energy workers that are trying desperately to counterbalance the crap that's happening on the other side. But you know, we're trying to return our existence back to balance, and a balance is a universal law, and it's going to happen. We have to return to balance at some point, and that's what we're all working to try to return to, as a state of balance.
This is interesting, because I've been talking about balance in the last few shows. The balance is not necessarily a left versus right, front versus back kind of thing. It's more like the balance that you balance your wheels when you have them balanced in the garage. It's a three-dimensional balance to make the wheel spin correctly and not eccentrically. That's another meaning of what balance means. So some people think that balancing something is just giving the opposite point of view, like the devil's advocate, and they think that's fair. But there are more sides to truth, as you and I know.
Well, yeah, and that's really the definition of duality, isn't it? Black, white, right, left, up, down. And if you add the other dimension into it, you get triality. So that's the three-dimensional, that's the three-dimensional picture that you were giving with the tires. That's a tri-dimensional thing.
That's right. And it'll probably go further. Until you get something like the machine in contact. Yes, with multiple gimbals. So we've established, Jack's got as far as he's made a website, and then, you've started putting some of his transmissions on. What's he talking about? I mean, okay, you know, he said, okay, I want a website. And what's his voice like? I mean, do you sense it as being like a high voice, a low voice? Does he speak quickly? Does he speak abruptly? Does he speak gently? What's the kind of quality of tone that you get from him?
Well, it depends. A lot of time it's just my own voice. It just sounds like my own voice in my head. And then sometimes his favorite language is French. So sometimes he'll actually speak to me in French. And even though I took French in school, I don't really remember a lot of it, but that is his favorite language. But most of the time when I hear him, like I said, it's really just my own voice. And I know that it's him because I can feel him and I can smell him and it almost feels like I'm wearing this horse coat and I feel like I have hooves and I can feel my nostrils and I can feel my ears and my tail and everything. So I know that it's his energy.
Okay. So you kind of get the horsiness, you find yourself immersed in a horsiness, quality. And, okay. So the first thing that comes to mind, you know, he talks about all these past life and the also, as you know, I'm going to ask you a maybe embarrassing question. I don't know, but do you feel that you have had? I mean, okay, here's the thing: when he said we are one, and then I'm hearing this. What you said is that immediately you felt a deep sorrow, and that you catharsis to deep sorrow for several minutes, while the horse held your space. You know, he'd expelled a lot of energy, and then he went through another catharsis process of fear or panic or some energy like that. Is that what I'm hearing? Because to me, that sounds like this is like a karmic rebalancing, like things that he wanted you to feel and things that he wanted to share that feeling, and perhaps he shared one of your feelings. Do you feel that he was responding to something in you? That's the question that I was asking.
Well, yeah, because Jack and I basically have the same issues, and we are very much, we are opposite sides of the same coin. So when this whole journey that we've been on has been a tremendously healing event for both of us. It's been quite liberating for both of us. So in that moment, Jack took, cause he, like I said, he's a watcher and he has healing abilities. So in that moment, he took the opportunity to use his healing abilities to demonstrate to me what he could do, not only for me, but for us together. And the other thing about working with the watchers is, forgive me if I've already mentioned this, but they work in groups. They don't work alone. They work in groups. So when Jack was demonstrating that, he was using the, He was tapping into the, that flock of birds that flew overhead. He was tapping into the energy of those, the horses that were running up. And when I work with clients, I'm working with at least three cats that in my home, plus any other animals that would come into the, to the situation, in addition to animals that may be in the client's homes. And so we're all working together as one. And, you know, this is something that animals, watchers, because like I said, watchers are also wild animals. When they're working in nature, they're working in giant herds, migrating flocks of birds. They're moving energy up in the sky that comes in from the sun, that comes cosmological energy, if that's even a word, that comes in from the cosmos into the earth. Migrating birds will capture this energy. They'll carry it along the magnetic lines, and they'll deposit it where they land. So they're moving energy around Gaia, over Gaia, through Gaia, but they're doing it in large numbers. And they know that their strength lies in their large numbers. And they're able to accomplish a lot more as a group as opposed to an individual. Did that answer your question?
I think so. Except it didn't say anything about you. Because what I was saying is, do you feel that you've had a connection with Jack back through the ages? Have you explored any of that? In the same way Nancy has a connection with Jack from at least 2,000 years.
Yeah, I have. I have gotten some flashbacks about our past lives together. But, you know, it's kind of difficult for me to explain that because I don't subscribe to one person, one soul. And so I haven't gotten to the opportunity yet to actually ask about this whole, the whole soul lineage thing. But to answer your question is, yes, I have vivid images of past lives with Jack. One was, I know he was Joan of Arc's horse. And I'm not saying that I was Joan of Arc, but I do have vivid images of her. And it may just be coming from Jack and our connection. And I also have images of us being I was a Knights Templar. And him being my horse and things that happened to us when we were Knights Templar. So as far as that goes, yeah, I have done a lot of exploration of my past lives. And sometimes Jack has been there and sometimes he hasn't. Did that answer your question?
That did answer my question. Thank you. So excellent. So,
content. Well, can I interject?
Here? Yes, Nancy, because
I think that you were also asking, was the energy transfer that they were doing, did that connect to just what was happening in the now, or was it going back to all the lifetimes? Did you feel like that this was, because of your reaction to it, it's almost like this was karmic even for the entire planet? Do you feel that sometimes that what you guys go through is releasing into a consciousness the energy that needs to be addressed and then released?
Well, okay, so if I'm getting your question right, I believe that, so when Jack and I are healing, and this isn't just going for me, this is going for a lot of people, I believe that there's a lot of people on this planet that are healing not only on behalf of themselves, but they are also healing on behalf of the Gaia Collective. So when a person who's healing on behalf of the Gaia Collective, when they have a healing experience, as Jack and I did in that moment, that is not only for us, and that healing is not only for us, but that has a collateral effect that's spreading out throughout all of the other beings that we are connected to, that we are healing on behalf of. Is that what you meant?
Exactly. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yes, because that's my knowledge of you guys and our interactions. That's what I get, is that, and I actually think that that's probably a cosmic rule, that every time one of us goes through an aha moment, whether it be a healing moment or just an aha, I understand now moment, the entire collective is energized with that knowledge. And that people should not underestimate the power of their own energy. And I think that that is being demonstrated, particularly through Jack, that, and the other watchers, because of course now that you've introduced so many of us to watchers, we can recognize them, that they're with us, you know, in our own homes. And that opens up another level of communication and learning and aha moments with these animals. So to me, this is one of the critical things that we as the group have to understand, is how powerful each individual is. That if we all become empowered, there's no stopping any of it. And Jack and the Watchers and yourself, I mean, I have to commend you. You're one of the most courageous people I've ever come across, that you would actually trust your instincts and trust Jack and the spirit guides and do this, because you brought so many of us together. So I deeply appreciate you and Jack and the Watchers and Gaia.
Well, thank you, Nancy. Thank you. I really appreciate that, too. You know, and to just go off a little bit more about what you said, you know, we can help this whole process. Humans are very incongruent. They tend not to, and by incongruent, I mean their thoughts, their feelings, their actions and their words are not in alignment. And they tend to, and this is what I appreciate and value so much in animals, because they are congruent. Their thoughts, their emotions, and their actions are all the same. They're all in alignment. And humans have a tendency to focus on what they don't want. And they have a tendency to focus on what they fear. But yet, they say that they don't want that. But yet, they expend all of this negative energy, all this negative thought energy, and all this negative emotional energy on a situation that they're afraid of. So in essence, what they're doing is they're pouring gasoline on a fire. So by simply just focusing on the outcome that you want, or if you read about something that is negative or doesn't make you feel good, sending it positive energy as opposed to sending it angry or fearful energy, that is just going to make the situation worse. You know, One of the most important reasons I'm here is to have people just consider that there is an entire fighting force of good that's helping to assist in the evolution of this planet. And it's not just the Watchers, it's not just the animals, it's the trees, it's the birds. It's the whales, it's the dolphins, it's the polar bears. It's all of these things that we call nature that most people think that they're disconnected from. But we're not. We're all a part of that nature too. And it's not just humans, like I said, it's not just humans that are assisting in this process. There is an entire other wing of beings that are assisting. And that's really what I'd like people to consider the most. So it's not just humans, it's animals too. And I'm hoping that people will take a different look at their animals and think that they're not just four-footed fuzzy little things, but they're actually highly intelligent. They communicate telepathically. They have a lot of them have a deep connection to Gaia and to galactic energy. So it's not just about Gaia, but it's also bringing in galactic energy and information and helping to disperse it around the planet. And until very recently, they've been working silently, they've been working selflessly behind the scenes. And it just really, in 2012 is when they came out of the closet, at least in my view, and it wasn't until very recently that I was even able to share my information with a larger audience. So I'm very grateful for this opportunity. I'm very grateful to you, Jay, and to you, Nancy, as well, for having me on tonight.
Well, we're very grateful. Go ahead, Nancy.
I want to tell a quick story because, I was doing some work here, and all of a sudden, I just got those intestinal cramps that you think are they're killing you. And I'm thinking, oh, no, it's nothing I ate. I don't know what it is. But I was in that kind of where you break out into sweat, you're dizzy, you can't breathe right. Everything goes wrong. You know, it's like, oh, my God, what's happening to me? And so I go to the bathroom, eliminate some of it, but then I'm still not in good condition. And I go into the bedroom where the dog is asleep on the bed. And I don't say anything to him. I just got to lay down, you know. And he looks at me, and then his eyes got really, really big. And he was like, oh, my God, you don't look good. And I lay down on the bed, and he gets up, and he comes over to me. And he lays slightly away from me, but he reached out with his paw, and he touched me. And like I said, I was having a hard time breathing. And so every time I would breathe in, his tail would go wag, wag, wag. And then, you know, he'd wait until the next breathe in, wag, wag, wag. And so I got really focused in on this wagging of the tail. And suddenly he just got up and moved away from me. And I thought, oh, man, what did he do that for? And then I realized I felt fine. I felt absolutely fine. just the story about what these animals can do.
Beautiful. And so, you know, your dog was training you to breathe properly.
Probably.
Yeah. Breathe after me. Come on. That's right. Yeah.
You know, and one day I get up, and Gina will tell you this. Is like I had to call her because I get up, and he's looking at me like there's something wrong with me. I mean, he's sitting there looking at me. And I'm going like, what's the matter? And it was like I was going to beat him up or something. He was terrified of me. And I'm going like, what's happened? And then the cat who had gone to sleep with us, he gets up limping. And I go, what is happening here? And so I called Jean. I said, Jean, the dog is acting like, you know, he's afraid of me. And she was at work, you know, and she said, oh, let me get back to you. And so then she calls me back about 20 minutes later and she says, well, you picked up some entity. I said, while I was sleeping? She said, well, I guess because you've got an entity there. And she said, I'll get rid of it. And so, you know, she had gotten rid of it, I guess, you know. And I said, well, how do I know it's gone? And she said, well, ask the dog. So I go in, I say, Shiloh, will you give me a hug? You know, and he looked at me and he had that fear look in his eyes. And then he looked again and he went, oh, yeah. And his tail started wagging and he ran up over to me.
So you remember that scenario, Gene? What was your angle on this? What was your experience of that?
No, I really don't remember that.
All right. Okay.
Nancy and I have had so many of those, we've had many of those exchanges. So I don't really remember that one in particular. Sorry.
Because you were at work. You were at work. You know, it was like, you know, she was doing this between teeth cleaning.
Oh, right. Okay. So, one of the things that, I'm interested in is, would you be interested in reading any of Jack's messages out? You know. Because if you read them, can I just say that if you were to read them, Gene, you'll be channeling mm-hmm. Jack's energy through the reading. Do you understand what I mean?
Yes.
Because you're connected
yes.
with him. So it would be a lovely thing to hear you read a few things. We're coming to the end of the show. So it would be lovely for people to know what the website's called. And also if you could read us a few paragraphs or something.
Okay, well, how about if I read Jack's first message?
That's a good place to start.
Okay. All right, so how much time do we have left?
We have about 7 minutes or 7 or 8 minutes.
All right, so I'll read fast. My name given to me by my human companion is Jack. However, I am a sentient being, a watcher. I was sent to Earth a millennium ago, and I have had multiple incarnations. I have been the guardian of my human companion, Jean, several times dating back to antiquity. I have also been the guardian of Joan of Arc and helped covet the scrolls of knowledge given to the Queen of Sheba to the Knights Templar. The information contained in the scrolls of knowledge is now to be revealed to assist humanity in the ascension into upper dimensions. Many are assisting in the human ascension, but I am to help humans realize that animals are ascending as well. It is imperative that the humans realize that there are watchers all over the world who are assisting in the ascension for all kingdoms of creation, animal, vegetable, and mineral. These watchers will begin to uncloak and reveal themselves as I have. I will, in systematic increments, reveal to my human companion gene information that will create a seamless ascension for all who read my words. My messages also contain nature seeds embedded within them that will provide an increase in frequency and healing for those who are open and read my words. Not all who are entitled to the energy of ascension will be drawn to the energy that can help them. Thus, I am creating a safety net for those who are aware and capable, but not necessarily drawn to human energies that may assist them. For those who read my words, know that I will be your vehicle, your chariot, and your champion, as I will help to carry you into the age of ascension. It is my honor to assist you in your quest for an increase in awareness, fortify your path of righteousness, and support the crumbling of all that is wrong. Having said that, gather all around you, be them animal, vegetable, or mineral, all whom you would like to participate in this process, but may not be a willing participant. You need not let on that they are ascending. You can be sneaky. Just open my message while they are present. That's all that there is to it. If they are willing, they will be present. So in this message, he released the pumpkin ray. So I'm looking down to that.
So when you say the pumpkin ray, we're talking about a kind of almost, it's not quite a neon orange, but it's very vibrant orange. And
it is. So he talks about the universal law of abundance, very specifically states that there's more than enough for everyone and everything living on Earth. The problem is that when the Templars were rounded up en masse on Friday, October 13, 1307, the Templars that were entrusted with the sacred information were imprisoned, tortured, or killed. The Templars that were left were greedy, scared, and power hungry. As the Templars fell into oblivion, they fractured into many different groups, and the information contained within their DNA that was meant to be shared with all for the betterment of all was held within a small dysfunctional group. They greedily misused the knowledge and funneled the abundance unto themselves. And as time passed, the group that misused this knowledge became more focused, more greedy, more hungry for power, more abusive, and more selfish. It wasn't just wealth that was filtered to a select few. It was wisdom as well. Revolutionary ideas were again funneled to a select group who turned their ideas into massive wealth only for themselves. Humans were slated to begin the ascension process just before the start of the Civil War. The invention and widespread installation of the telegraph heralded the beginning of ascension, but the darkness was able to block this process by starting the Civil War. 3 to 5 smaller countries and would have never been able to effectively band together during World War I and World War II to defeat the evil that breathed during those times. Beginning in the 1950s, another ascension attempt began, and the civil rights movement marked the beginning. During the 1980s, when enough energy had been gathered to move into higher dimensions, very thirsty. Okay. So the scales have now been tipped, and the darkness is losing control, and ascension has dug in her feet and will not be deterred this time. And because of this, it is now time to reintroduce the universal law of abundance as it was meant to be shared. The energy of this law has been purified, cleansed, and recalibrated to function during this time. So embedded within this message matrix will allow the recipient to integrate the universal law of abundance as it was meant to be. The law has begun to gain momentum, but now it has been calibrated correctly. This is why so many versions of manifesting have surfaced, but why it fails to meet the expectations for so many. The law cannot penetrate through fear, so it works to some extent, but cannot reach its full potential until the fear of scarcity has been dissipated. Um, trying to find.
So that's a really interesting paragraph, though, because everybody's worried about money, but it's the fear of scarcity that creates that worry that creates the money in the first place, because it's all about debt. And
right.
And these are things that you know, and also, you know, I was talking about my own guides. They've been saying the same thing, and they've been talking about, you know, the factions involved and all sorts of things. So we're all watching it dissipate in a way, isn't it? Aren't we? That's the end of the show. Not with a bang, but with a whimper.
Thank you, Jack.
Thank you, Nancy. And thank you so much, Gene Rockefeller and Jack the Watcher. It's been a great show. Bless your hearts. Thank you so much.
GeneRockefeller.com. Gene
Rockefeller. Oh, yes, GeneRockefeller.com. Spelled the way you'd expect it.
Jack the Watcher. Google it.